let's give another minute or two for this shit.
So this is our December 8th meeting of the Law Enforcement Public Safety Committee, which I'd like to call to order. We got the recording going.
Yep.
Very good. I will start with asking for an approval of the November 3rd meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second. All right. Moved by Heppner. Second by Hewitt. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor of approving them?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That is unanimous. Before we get into resolutions, we had an update to the agenda. We know we have a resolution for clean slate to for the legislature to send a letter, or really the memorializing resolution to memorialize our support for clean slate legislation. And we, at the last meeting, we postponed it so that we could get some more information. And I've asked some of the folks that have been part of this effort to join us, and the person that I've been speaking with is Luke Forbes, who I believe is on the line here, and I asked to give them, I asked them to provide about 5 minutes overview of what they, you know, what the legislation is, and we'll have an opportunity to ask any questions, and then after that, as long as no one has any objection, we'll take Resolution 495 out of order, because that's the resolution in question. With that, I'll hand it over to Luki, and if you want to introduce anyone from your team, please feel free to do so. The floor is yours.
How is everyone doing? My name is Luki Forbes. I am a directly impacted person. I'm also the civil rights coordinator for the Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition, and I believe there's about two more members from our coalition on the call right now. We have Garrett Smith, and we also have Kate Goldstein. I'm sorry if I botched your last name, I believe I got it right. And we're here to talk about the Clean Slate Initiative, the act that's being proposed on the state level from the Assembly and Senate. This is a non-partisan piece of legislation that would allow for people who have criminal backgrounds to actually be able to benefit from automatic ceilings. This is a provision that would allow for individuals after 3 years for misdemeanors and 7 years for felonies. And this time does not actually start to kick in until after they complete their time on post-release. So they will complete their sentencing, then complete their time on post-release, then the time for the actual automatic ceiling to kick in will actually start, where they will have to complete 3 years without committing another infraction for them to be able to experience the automatic release for a misdemeanor and 7 years for a felony. This is also something that is sexual offenses, and any offense where an individual has to register will be excluded from this, so those individuals won't qualify under this clause, and this is only a ceiling, so it's not a full-out expungement, and law enforcement jobs that do federal background checks, certain licensing agencies will still be able to see folks' backgrounds. So any job that hires around any vulnerable population or sensitive information that requires fingerprinting as well as larger federal background checks, they will automatically be able to see folks' records. And then I also have my two colleagues that can speak on any of the other misnomers out there that folks have heard around Clean Slate and just really be able to address a little bit more of like the details around the bill itself. So I'll just pass it off to Kate and Garrett. Either one of you can just go ahead and jump in on that.
Sure, and I'm happy to hear if there are any questions. I mean, I feel like Luki covered the big items, a few things just sort of clarify and reiterate. There has been some confusion around the time calculation at points, and so basically in practice what it means is that the waiting period starts when somebody is released from incarceration in prison, and then they also have to have completed parole or probation to be eligible. And so the idea is that they then have that number of years without a subsequent conviction, and at that point they become eligible for their convictions to be sealed to enable them, again, as Luki was talking about, for most civil purposes, so the convictions would remain accessible for purposes of law enforcement, that sort of thing. But for most civil purposes, where there is not a mandated fingerprint check for a position, or where there is not a permitted fingerprint check if the position involves vulnerable populations or children, then those jobs or clearances or licenses have access for those purposes. And the other thing I wanted to emphasize is just that this bill is, you know, basically what we see is sort of common sense legislation, that it has gotten really wide support across the board from a wide range of stakeholders. So we have a lot of businesses and large employers who are very supportive of the bill. JP Morgan Chase, Verizon, Microsoft, a lot of chambers of commerce, because basically this is good for business, this is good for employment, this is basically allowing people to be able to move forward with their lives once they are back in the community and have had a period of time there. And at the same time, it also has a lot of support from labor, which doesn't always align with business. So we have broad support across the board, faith leaders, civil rights leaders as well. And yeah, happy to answer any questions. And we'll pass to Garrett too to see if he has anything else to add.
You covered a lot. I think the only thing that I would add to this is that Senator Enchie, she is a co-sponsor of Clean Slate Act. She was a part of the 38 members that voted yes in the Senate that Clean Slate passed last session. So again, just support across the board and in a lot of areas of New York State. It's not just business and labor support, but Clean Slate as a whole has been grown and fueled primarily by us, the people. You know, so it's a lot of just grassroots organizing, a lot of grassroots groups and members, just folks that's just across New York State that's a part of our coalition as a whole. And you know, we're just looking forward to getting this bill passed this year. Or this year for the session, 2023 session, and we hope you guys can support it with this resolution. And it'll be added again to the growing municipalities across the state that have been passing resolutions in support of Clean Slate.
Great, thank you
so
much.
I also wanted to just lastly throw in there that Columbia County also on November 19th just signed in a proclamation, and that came through the Public Safety Committee, where even the undersheriff also expressed her support for Clean Slate. And the reasoning from her standpoint was she's seen both from law enforcement's point of view as well as a family member of a directly impacted person, and how that can limit the resources they can provide to their children, and how people can benefit from this bill once it's passed.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate all of you joining us for this. Does anyone on the committee have any questions for them? Sheriff, I see you've got your hand up. Why don't we go to you?
I do. I just want to make a comment. First, I want to thank everybody for coming on and discussing this. And by the way, the undersheriff and I went to the academy, the State Police Academy up there from Columbia County. So I'm very familiar with Zaki. For the purposes of law enforcement, I was skeptical at first. I got an update from the New York State Sheriff's Association, what I shared with the chair and the vice chair of the Public Safety Committee. Access to sealed records would still be permissible in the following circumstances. I think this is important for everyone to know. Upon the request by the defendant or his or her attorney, by the court or prosecutor for the purpose of a pending criminal action, predicate charging, sentencing, prior bad acts, evidence by qualified agencies when acting within the scope of their law enforcement duties, or any specific statutory authority that includes a sheriff's office, any prospective employer of a police officer or peace officer, any law enforcement agency responsible for firearms licensing, and for the purposes of a civilian investigation into the law enforcement or prosecutorial misconduct, as well as entities that are required by state or federal law to conduct fingerprint-based background check, and specifically entities that provide services to children in transportation network companies like Uber, Lyft, etc. I say this because I am a supporter of this. I know a story. I have a similar story. I had a cousin from the days of the crack epidemic in the 80s. It was awful. It was terrible. And here we are, 30 years later. He was lucky to get a job, but he's afraid to apply for a higher paying job because he's afraid his history is going to come back and haunt him. And he's also afraid that if this new job that he's applying for contacts his old job, that he'll lose his old job. I think it's time for this change. I support it. And I definitely support the Clean Slate Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Anyone else?
We appreciate you.
Anyone have any questions or points of discussion? So with that, I would ask for a motion to consider resolution number 495, supporting the New York State Clean Slate Act, Assembly Bill 6399 and Senate Bill 1553. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
All right, motion from Heppner. Second from Hansett. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, that is unanimous. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate it, and we don't fault you at all if you want to drop off the Zoom now. We've got a bunch more stuff tonight to get to.
We appreciate you all for helping support Clean Slate, and as a directly impacted person, this is really going to help so many people across the state of New York, and each of you, this act alone, has already helped us further in our mission, so we greatly appreciate you all.
Great. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you speaking about it. Thank you. All right. So we'll go into the rest of our resolutions here. I will entertain a motion for resolution number 189, establishing a policy prohibiting the housing of incarcerated individuals transferred from facilities outside of Ulster County, the No More Incarceration for Profit policy, Ulster County Board in policy. Can I have a motion?
Motion
from Hewitt.
Second.
Second from Heppner. I did speak with the author of the legislation, and he requested a postponement. So if any further discussion?
I'll move the postponement.
All right.
Yep.
All right. So we've got a motion from Heppner, second from Hansett. On the postponement, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. 189 is postponed. Resolution number 652, amending the 2023 budget to create three positions for BJA FY 22, Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Abuse Site-Based Program Grant, Ulster County Sheriff's Office. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Okay.
And a second? All right, motion from Hewitt, second from Hansett. Sheriff Figueroa, do you want to give us a bit of an overview here?
So this is our enhancement to the COSAP grant. I have my expert here, and I'm going to let her speak a little bit to it. Juanita Hotchkiss. No pressure.
Yes, hi, everyone. Happy to speak to this. Yes, this is an enhancement to the previous COSAP grant that was awarded to the sheriff's office, which allowed for the sheriff to expand his Oracle team to include a high-risk mitigation team led by a social worker and two peer advocates. This grant will allow for these three positions. Two of the positions we are asking for are peer care manager positions. One is going to be focused on, you know, working specifically with jail reentry, probation, so other criminal justice systems, so providing support, providing peer support, providing care management, to individuals who were impacted by substance use. And so the other individual will be working very specifically in our community, focusing in on the rural communities and in our counties. Our initial COSAP grant did not focus on the rural communities, focusing on the city of Kingston. And so this will allow the team to expand their reach. And additionally, there will be a director of community and
incarcerated services.
I don't have my notes in front of me. And so this person will be working in really in tandem. So it will be a civilian position working under the undersheriff, and will be connecting really working to develop these programs, connect the systems, to develop systems level, integration. So, integration, mental health, other substance use community-based organizations, as well really overseeing the team itself and its functions.
I'd like to add a little bit to that. Thank you, Juanita.
You're welcome.
This position, and that is the Director of Community Incarcerated Services. I did send the specs to the chair earlier today, additional information, but it's important to understand what we're trying to accomplish here. I believe this is the future of law enforcement. Right now, we're dealing with an epidemic of opioids, but we're also dealing with mental health issues. We're also dealing with issues of violence. And this position is going to enhance not only the Ulster County Sheriff's Office, but every law enforcement entity in the county. This is why this is so important. It's not just dealing with the incarcerated individuals and helping with the discharge and reentry and following through for a while so people don't fall through the cracks, but it's also going to be dealing with community issues. And it's going to be the direct liaison to the sheriff. They're going to provide training opportunities for law enforcement and implement behavioral health and substance use programming. They're going to oversee community-based efforts in collaboration with law enforcement and corrections. They're going to coordinate grant packages. One of the biggest things that I saw when I first took office, we had nobody in the office. But for example, Orange County has six folks that focuses strictly on law enforcement type grants. And that is going to be part of the title of this, of course, working with our county exec's office. There's also going to be a direct liaison with our Commissioner of Mental Health, our Department of Health, and it's going to keep the Sheriff's Office informed of any issues that may occur involving the intergovernmental entities of our county. This is a huge step forward for the Ulster County Sheriff's Office, and it's going to be great because it's going to be funded by this federal grant, and we'll be able to see the successes that that come from this. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, this is very exciting. I know how hard you all have worked on getting us this far, and it's very exciting to see that recognized with further funding. Anyone on the committee have any questions or comments?
Sounds good.
Yep.
Is it supposed to say fiscal year 23?
I believe that's correct. It is for fiscal year 2023?
It actually starts, the funding starts now.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
The majority of folks is going to be funded, even though it's for fiscal, we did budget it for 2023. This actually, we can pay for it now. I mean, obviously we're in December, it won't start until 2023.
Okay. Because the title says fiscal year 22, which is correct.
The grant works from the federal budget cycle, and that is October, or September to October.
Okay.
So we can actually, if approved, can hire somebody now. But I realize we're in December 8th, and the likelihood of that is unlikely. So obviously, we will hire somebody in 2023.
Okay.
It's probably the grant name, BJA.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. Any other comments or questions? All right, then I will call the question. All those in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, that is unanimous. Resolution number 653, approving the execution of a contract for $56,948.08 entered into by the county with Black Creek Integrated Systems Corp., the Ulster County Sheriff. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
And a second. So motion from Hefner, second from Hansett. Sheriff, do you want to give us some background on where we're at with the Black Creek contract?
Well, we had a capital that was approved last year, so this is just the continuation of Black Creek. Black Creek is the security system that's responsible for every door, camera that's located at the Ulster County Law Enforcement Center, in particular the jail.
Great. Any questions from folks on the committee? Or other legislators here? Any points of discussion? All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, it's unanimous. Resolution number 654, approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with Aramark Correctional Services, LLC, through the Ulster County Sheriff's Office. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
And a second? All right, motion from Hewitt, second from Hansett. all H names here. It's really complicated to keep track of everyone. Yeah. All right. Sheriff, do you want to give us an overview on where we are with the jail food?
So this was put out for bid, but I want to first talk about the history of the previous contract that we're still under that ends early January when we get this new contract in place. So we had a company called Trinity, and it was the lowest bid, I believe, when we got that, and that was done with the previous administration in 2018 prior to me taking office. We had so many issues involving the food at the county jail. To me, as well as the men and women that work at the sheriff's office, in particular our corrections officer, it's a security issue when the folks that are incarcerated at the Coastal County Jail are fed food that really is not good. And there was one time, my first year there, I actually came down because an entire housing unit didn't want to eat the food. And what was happening was that some of the meals were similar. For example, it would be beef and carrots for lunch, and then like a beef mixture and maybe another vegetable for dinner. And it was it would irritate the incarcerated individuals, which to me is a security issue. We needed to change our food. The other part of that is, of course, the rank and file that works at the Ulster County Jail. The food that was given, because unlike any other place, our folks at the jail just can't go out and go to lunch and come back. Not the way it works. It's a secured facility, and you know, we have had issues with not just workers but corrections officers that've gotten in trouble for bringing things that shouldn't be coming in. So they bring their own lunch or they order it in, when in fact we should be supplying the meals if we're not allowing them to leave. And so the food was terrible, and it was time to change that, to add additional holidays that this company's going to do. Not just for our Jewish folks, for our Islamic folks. So there's additional meals recognizing these holidays, as well as giving a better meal to our corrections staff. I have a warden here. I want him to touch a little bit on it because he runs the day-to-day operations at the Ulster County Jail. Major Becker.
Yeah, hi. So we had Aramark for years, and 4 years ago, Trinity came into the picture. And one of the things we thought was Trinity was really based on jail food service. So Aramark, as you know, they have stadiums and everything around the country. So jails weren't really their thing. And when Trinity came in, you know, we thought, wow, they're a jail-based program, and they're going to come in. And they came in with, again, the low bid and the low price. And you thought nothing but they were going to come in and do the right thing. And, you know, we got what we paid for. And, you know, they came in and it just got progressively worse, not better. And even talking to them and trying to adjust it. Aramark, we never had issues with them. And they were with us from the old jail. And, you know, they really seem like they're interested in coming in here and making a difference. And as the sheriff was talking about for the incarcerated population, it's casseroles. All Trinity had was casseroles. And again, the casseroles, they changed something, like they changed meat sauce with scrambled eggs, and they were basically getting the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner on a lot of occasions. So we took a lot of time with the menus and looked at them and changed a lot of that up, where a lot of stuff that they were getting was mechanically separated chicken. That sounds great. You know, we got a lot of turkey and beef back into the menu, so we wouldn't have those kinds of problems. And fruit and, you know, all the health aspects of it, fruits and vegetables, we made sure that they'll be in the process also. And as the sheriff said, and staff also, we're wasting money on staff meals because the meals are so terrible that they're ordering out food. And we want to bring all that back and give the officers some incentive here.
Great, thank you.
And also, one last point, it will also change the morale, not just for the incarcerated individuals, but the folks that work at the jail every single day. So this is something that's extremely important to me, and the office, of course, you know, we are responsible for all the incarcerated individuals, their medical needs, their food needs, their housing needs. So this is something that I think will kind of change things back there, and it's extremely important to do that. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? I have a question. Can you speak specifically to the vegetables, the produce that they're going to have in this new contract?
So I don't actually have the menu in front of me, but we addressed, you know, actual fruit for breakfast rather than a fruit juice or a fruit product. So those are some of the things that we address them for, actually having the actual fruit and vegetables on a day-to-day basis versus maybe once or twice a week as they do it now.
Great.
And that was something that was brought up by the chair of our legislature, and we made sure that we included that. But I also want to add that one of the issues that we have when we put fruit out there is that they start turning the fruit into alcohol, and it becomes an issue. But the truth is that the fruit was terrible, and we're really looking to change that. And hopefully the folks that are incarcerated understand what we're trying to do, and they wouldn't ferment the fruit and turn it into alcohol.
Okay. Legislator Erner?
Thank you. I was aware of a state, the head of corrections for the state prisons, making some change that prohibited some farmers, at least that I know from the area. They went to Albany to protest this because they were no longer able to get their produce into the state prisons. Does that affect our county jail at all?
No, we specifically requested that we get additional vegetables and fruit. To my knowledge, I haven't seen anything from the State Commission on Corrections regarding fruit, and the major would know more.
No. No, we're not even affiliated with that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there
that's a statement.
And I know we talked to Aramark about buying local food also.
Yes.
And what did they say?
Great point. I forgot that. Great point. So we're looking to buy local fruit and produce when they take over, which is going to help our own economy here.
And they were open to that? They feel that that's feasible?
They do.
Great.
Yeah, they were on board with it. Yep.
Very good. Legislator Hewitt?
Yeah, we discussed that. That was one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we included when we had the conversation with them, that we wanted them to purchase local produce if possible.
Yep.
And they agreed.
Legislator Hewitt?
Thanks. I'm wondering if you have a compost program. I've started meeting with Superintendent of Schools, Joe Morgan of Rondout Schools, and they are implementing a compost program with a state requirement for institutions that create more than 2,000 pounds of food waste per month. Are you in that requirement also?
We actually have and I'm going to let the major talk about it. He's very familiar with what we have in the kitchen. So go ahead, Major.
So we do have a composter. It's not, I wouldn't say it is the perfect one for the size of the facility we are, but we do do that. One of the biggest issues with the composter is getting the county to pick it up and whoever the service is to pick it up. There was a point that we had it out on the loading dock waiting to be picked up, like garbage pails full of it. But yes, we do have a compost program, and it could be expanded.
Great, thank you.
And I believe it was our county environment that actually purchased it. You know, that they had a grant that purchased that piece of equipment in the jail. But we've had it for a few years.
Great. Awesome. Thank you.
And can you speak also to the way that Aramark is going to be addressing the staff meals? Like how, like what is going to be different for the staff with this new vendor?
Go ahead, Major. You got this one.
So they're going to enhance the ODR a little bit. And one of the big things that a lot of the companies are doing now is they're providing like a to-go store type of scenario where officers on any shift, any hour of the day, they could go in the officer's dining room and they could purchase items, you know, whatever. We're going to sit down and talk to them about what we want in there, but it's yogurts, sandwiches, you know, that stuff will be available for purchase separate from the officer meals, where they'll be provided, each shift will be provided a meal.
So they're going to enhance it to make it look, the officer dining room, like a deli.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. I kind of remember that concept from college.
And they're doing it in jails now, and it wasn't new to them when we asked about it. So that all the food service companies are now doing this.
Great.
Realizing that there should be some kind of enhancement for the officers, especially when they're on mandatory overtime and some place for them to go in, and it's not just the block wall, room. They're gonna dress it up a little bit with furniture. So
that's great. Great. Well, you'll have to let us know when you start getting feedback after it's implemented.
We will.
Great.
And there is a training aspect to this for our incarcerated individuals. Yeah, just touch on that real quick.
Please.
So they'll actually train the individuals, in the baking skills and everything like that, because most of the kitchen workers will be doing the food prep. And when they leave, they'll actually get a certificate from Aramark, stating that they whatever they certified them in cooking and things like that to assist them in getting jobs once they get out in the world.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. I know that's come up in the past. All right. Any further questions? Otherwise, I'll call the question.
And just the other thing also is with that is we've been, our kitchen's been stale for a long time, and this is why we're looking for this rejuvenate of the whole aspect of it to make it better and move forward with it. Because a lot of this stuff should have been happening, wasn't happening, and we're starting fresh here, and everything's going to go the way it's supposed to be put out there.
And what he means by that is there's going to be a change. We're assuming, and we feel confident of the people that are working there, which need a change.
Yep. And I should also ask what the what's the change in cost per meal? How does that differ from the Trinity contract?
It's going to be more expensive.
Yeah, how much?
You got the numbers in front of you?
If I'm not mistaken, somewhere around $1 a meal. But again, you get what you pay for.
Yep.
And we thought it was the right thing for the county to take that low number and, save money, and it did not benefit us at all.
So there are three different zones or styles of meals. One was the low, one was the medium, one was the high. Compared to the other companies, there were three companies that submitted bids. One was Trinity, one was Aramac, and the other one was a company called Summit. When it was reviewed by the committee that was put together, I was on that committee. It's the best food, and that basically the holidays were a big issue too, was Aramac. And we went with the medium bid, not the most expensive one from Aramac. And even the medium one is probably, to us, the highest end that a Trinity would ever have. So this is a plus for the people at the Ulster County Jail. They're going to be eating more healthier food. They're going to get, certificates when they leave if they're trained. And I think, yes, we're going to pay a little bit more, but I think we gain more money at the end. Once we put some folks out there that perhaps they might get a job from these certificates, and morale is going to be boosted, and it's an entire change of how the folks that, I believe the folks that have been there, nothing against them, they've been there for such a long time, they were just immune to any changes. So having new people there with new energy and new ideas is going to be such a big difference. Not just for the incarcerated individuals, but for the members that work at the jail every day.
Great. Legislator Hanson.
So the current contract ends January, so this would take place in February, start? Great.
Yes, they'll come in January. Yes.
Thank you.
Great. All right. So I'll call the question. All those in favor of resolution number 654?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, it's unanimous. Great, thank you guys. Appreciate it. And Warden, if you want to drop now, I don't know if you have any more resolutions tonight, but we wouldn't fault you at all.
I think these are the only three that we have on our agenda. Thank you so much for putting me up first. I appreciate it. Good to see everybody, and I'll see you when I get back.
All right, very good. Enjoy Virginia.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Resolution number 655, approving the execution of a contract for $51,136.20 entered into by the county with Motorola Solutions, Inc., Emergency Management. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Move it.
Second. All right. Moved by Hefner. Second by Hewitt. And I'll defer to Director Erickson to give us some background here.
So this is the yearly contract maintenance on our microwave communication system. So just a yearly, and we're just renewing the contract. So.
Okay. And this is the same, actually, never mind. I know the answer to that. All right, any questions from the committee? Legislator Hewitt.
I feel like we had a conversation around microwave communication, which makes me think we voted on something like this in the last 3 months.
There was a hardware purchase that was grant funded for
correct.
This. Yeah.
Yep, that's for the Saugerties Tower. So, you know, as we move forward, we build out the towers, we're going to be purchasing more more microwave systems to put up on the towers. So that's just to bring those towers into our system to cover the entire county. We do have gaps that we're trying to address, which, I mean, if you recall, Assistant Chief Translito was here a few months ago to speak regarding those.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions? All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor of Resolution 655?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Resolution number 656, approving the execution of a contract for $69,981 entered into by the county with this is also with Motorola Solutions. I was having a trip out here. for the Office of Emergency Management, can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second.
All right, motion by Hewitt, second by Hefner. And again, Director Erickson, if you want to give us a quick overview.
So again, this is extending our yearly maintenance contract on our fire and EMS radio dispatch system.
Great. Any questions from the committee? And these are all, these contracts and the work that we're doing here, none of this becomes redundant once we get things rolling with the Government Operations Center. Okay. Great. And I realize it's a services contract, so those are the easiest to not fret about having to end as opposed to a hardware purchase. All right. Well, and with that, if there's no further discussion, I'll call the question on Resolution 656. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Resolution 657, approving the execution of a contract for $174,500 entered into by the county with Tetra Tech, Inc., Emergency Management. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second.
All right, moved by Hansett, second by Hefner. Director Erickson?
We have a hazard mitigation plan. It's a county plan where all the townships can opt into rather than having to write their own. Most townships have opted into our current plan that's in place that does expire at the end of the year. We did submit a letter to New York State to hold our current hazard mitigation plan in place, as a lot of townships as well as Ulster County do have projects in with FEMA to make, you know, changes and address hazard mitigations within their towns. So we're waiting to hear back from them on that letter. But this is the process that we need to do. This is all grant funding. 80% of it is 90% of it is grant funded. So up to $180,000. And we would pay the other 20%. The other 10%, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The note that I have here is that this is 100% state funded, though.
That's incorrect.
Okay.
We accept the grant from New York State for 90-10.
Okay. Michael, can you make a note of that just so we can look into that to make sure it's correct before it goes to Ways and Means? Because that'll... Yeah. Right, that's what it says on there.
Yeah, 100% state.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll just make sure that that's updated before it goes to Ways and Means. And since that's just a anecdotal, an ancillary part of the resolution, we don't actually have to make an amendment. That's just something that we really appreciate adding in there, but it's not actually technically part of the amendment. All right, any other questions or concerns? Okay. I will call the question on resolution number 657. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Resolution 658, approving the execution of a contract for $50,000 entered into by the county legal services of the Hudson Valley Department of Probation. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion. Second.
All right. And for perhaps the last time, I will defer to Director Schmidt.
Thank you. This is the $50,000 for domestic violence victims to be able to get civil legal service assistance. We did an RFP, and once again, Legal Services of the Hudson Valley was the winner of the RFP. This is probably the third or fourth series of this funding, and this is to approve the contract.
Any questions from the committee? I will ask a question. I'm curious just because it's come up with for a different area of law with legal services, but have they ever had any issues fulfilling the contract for lacking a number of lawyers or not having enough manpower?
So in the past few years, they had a couple of maternity leaves and different things like that, and so on occasion they struggled with staff. But simultaneously, they also had another grant that was funneled from the state through us for legal services, and that was like $250,000. So it was a lot of attorneys that were being funded under that. Now that is separate from us. We're not involved in that, and it's just 50. I do not anticipate we'll have that problem. They were always able to at least do this part of it.
But there's never been an issue with an individual in need of representation that wasn't able to because of any constraint like that.
Well, they did have to at one point stop taking new referrals because they did not have the staff to be able. I mean, there's a shortage with so many professional positions right now.
So what do we do in that circumstance, or what was done then?
I don't know how they received those services if they just got on the waiting list and had to wait. They're fairly large, so they have a lot of other funding streams. So sometimes, like if it was a immigration matter that had to do also with their situation, they could maybe use that attorney, but they do try to provide. They are obligated once they begin with somebody to always continue that case through to the end, whether funded or not. So they are hyper aware of it. When they don't have the staff, they will cut back on taking in new cases to make sure they have the staffing to carry through the open cases to the end.
Got it. Okay. Any other questions or points of discussion? All right. All those in favor? Any opposed? And before I move on, I just want to say, Nancy, it has been such a pleasure to have you as part of this team, and your tenure obviously precedes just about all of us here at this table, but you've been someone that I've been able to learn a lot from, and in the short time we've worked together, I have deep respect for your work and for the legacy that you're leaving behind at the county. Thank you.
I'm honored that you said that.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, moving on from there, we'll go to Resolution 659, amending the 2023 county budget to create a full-time family court assistant public defender position from the public defender's office. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second.
All right, this is a motion from Hansett, second from Hepburn. And a budget that is a few days old is being amended, which I know why, but I'm just pointing that out. I will... pass it off to Cliff to share some background on where we are here.
Well, I didn't bring my expert, so I'm going to make Chris Kelly my de facto expert. But as many of you may have heard, that we discontinued, not by our request, but our shared services agreement with Dutchess County. That request was made at the behest of Tom Angel, who's the public defender there. And it's because the family court responsibilities became somewhat lopsided. In other words, Dutchess
county was handling far more cases than our conflict for defender, and there's various reasons why that came about, but nevertheless, when I became the acting or interim public defender, I tried to save that relationship with the family court just because I hadn't had a chance to really become a part of it, and I wanted to see what I could do. But it had gone too far, so they discontinued that service, so we needed to find coverage for Judge Savona. And that's one of the big reasons that this has been a surprise and a rush, because this was, we were given notice of this a couple weeks ago, perhaps. And so, and as you know, in criminal law, but in also family law, you know, we just can't let it hang there. So we really do need the staff. My expert, who does my budget, not my de facto expert, but it's going to be fully funded, and ILS is behind us. So.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Yep, Deputy.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'd just like to, we've been in a discussion with the family court, Ulster County, for several months now, and this is a compounding problem in the family court area, less so right now in criminal, although they are hurting to find qualified attorneys that'll take what's called, so if the public defender can't defend a case because they're conflicted out, it goes to a conflict defender. And if the conflict defender position doesn't exist, it goes to what's called an 18B panel. And that exists both on the criminal and the family court side. On both sides of the river, both family courts, 18B panels have shrunk from, I know ours at one point was probably 24, and I think we're down to about 8. So, and it's not uncommon to have conflicts in these cases. So when we looked at, I think there's 118 cases currently pending in Judge Savona's court. 40 of those are considered conflict cases where you have to have other representation than a public defender. You go to that 18B panel. Those 8 attorneys or 9 attorneys that are left are only staying on because they're loyal to the family court system and the justices there. They could all probably retire and walk away. The big rub, and this is becoming a statewide issue, is they get paid $75 an hour for representation. That hasn't been changed in at least a decade, and there's some movement in terms of in the court in New York City. In one part in New York City, a judge ruled that we're doubling it. It's 150 now. There was a bill in that it was part of, I think, the governor's budget, but I know it was circulating at the same time to raise from 75 statewide to 150. That's the difference maker. That's the whole ball game where that 18B panel would start to fill up again. But at $75 an hour for, you know, criminal cases are intense. Family court gets super intense when you're talking about taking children away and doing all of those different complicated cases. So people right out of law school are just not signing up. And this is all in the conversations with Judge Savona and the different justices, Justice Rakoff. So we're trying to work with them. We are bound by that limit. We're trying to see if we could propose raising other parts of our compensation, because this is something the county's required to pay for on the 18B side. ILS will only supplement certain parts with these distributions or grants. They don't touch most of it on the family court side.
Criminals for ILS.
So, because that's usually from the Harrow Herring side and all the other different settlement funds. So this is what we're doing in order to kind of stop the bleeding a little bit and make sure Judge Savona is supported. But this is not going to be the end of the conversation. I've talked to ILS. We're going to talk to NYSAC. This is one of those instances where you almost need the state to come in and mandate more money.
Right.
Because if you don't, then you've got a true crisis in the calendar. Things are not going to be heard. You're not going to have quality representation. Same thing you had on the criminal side, which is why Harold Herring stepped in and said, we need to give the public defenders more who defend 70 to 75% of criminal clients in Ulster County. So we'll be hearing more, and I think I would recommend to you guys reaching out to Elaine Steinmeier, the chief clerk of family court over there, and hearing her out, because I think they do need more of an audience and more help.
So, Michael, can you get her information and send it around to the committee, and or we'll touch base and decide how best to engage with her. Any questions from folks on the committee? So I'll just say, you know, whatever we can do to make the changes that we can at the state level, whether it's writing a letter or something more than that, I would say at a minimum, I would like us to put together a letter that we can sign on to ask for that change. You know, this is a topic that's very close to me. I was a child that spent a lot of time in family court myself, and, you know, not for the worst circumstances that you can imagine, but, you know, families go through things have to get sorted out, and having the right kind of people there is pretty damn important. It'll affect the rest of your life. So anything that we can do, I think we should do. But thank you for being here and sharing that with us.
And I wish I had more to add. And people that know me know that I'm really an expert on criminal law. I mean, that's where I've made my bones. And my family court bureau chief, Liz Corrado, and the staff that we have in family court are incredible. So I rely mostly on them with their advice. So I just wanted to add that.
Great, thank you. All right, if there's no further comments or questions, I'll call the question on resolution number 659. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, it's unanimous. Resolution 660, authorizing the chair of the legislature to enter into an agreement with the New York State Office for Indigent Legal Services for distribution number 13, the Public Defender's Office. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Moved.
Second.
All right, moved by Hefner, second by Hewitt. And I will defer again.
Yes, we have a really excellent attorney that works as the conflict criminal lawyer in Dutchess, Mara Tamarian. She's a top-notch attorney, handles everything from murders all the way down to sex offenses. Really a great attorney. This is just a continuation because, as we stated before, Dutchess cut our shared services with family court, but they like very much how the criminal aspect is going, so that is remaining in place. So she's our conflict defender at Dutchess, and this is just this line goes to continue paying her in that position.
Okay. Any questions? Any discussion? All right, I'll call the question on resolution 660. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that is unanimous. Thank you so much. Resolution number 661, appointing, or rather confirming appointment of a member to the Traffic Safety Board. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second.
From Hewitt. Second from Hefner. I can speak to this briefly, and then I'll defer to anyone from the county executive team if they have anything to say, but I'll just mention Traffic Safety Board. A little bit of background. I believe that we recognize, I hope, that there is an epidemic of traffic violence in this country, and this county and this city and all parts of the county are not immune to it. It's been bad. We have, in many cases, a broken system where developments, you know, buildings and roads are created without thought for pedestrians. We have laws that result in things like a pedestrian being hit by a driver, and the only person you can ticket is the pedestrian. We had that happen in the town of Ulster as the pedestrian was trying to cross infrastructure that was built completely disregarding pedestrian travel. And I do want to always highlight this when we talk about the Traffic Safety Board. We have appointed a number of members this year. I had the chance to speak with Chief Lucchese. This is the member that's being appointed here. He's the police chief from New Paltz. We had a great conversation. He's a cyclist. He appreciates a lot of the you know, dialogue that is going on around traffic safety right now, and I'm confident that he'll be a good appointment here. I have been concerned in the past about this being a very law enforcement heavy board, but we have gotten some strong advocates for pedestrians and cyclists on there, and I think Chief Lucchese is gonna do a good job. So I hope I'm not speaking out of turn too much by saying that from the position of chair here, but I wanted to share that because I had a really good conversation with him yesterday. Legislator Hewitt?
I wanted to thank you for sharing that article and also for your use of the word epidemic. I think since we realized that 1 million people can die through the COVID epidemic, I've mentioned a few times on the floor the 1 million people who die every year in traffic accidents around the world. And I think we have to take it seriously.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, with that, I will call the question on resolution number 661. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Great. So that ends our resolutions for the night. We don't have any old business. We do have some new business. Director Doyle would like to share with us some new business.
Thank you. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Government Operations Center. First of all, I wanted to thank the committee for its support for the Government Operations Center. I just want to talk to you about where we are moving forward. We're going to be back to you with a late resolution that's being drafted right now. That late resolution would increase the capital project amount relative to the Government Operations Center, and the reason for that is we expended a considerable more effort on the site selection than was in the original contract. The original contract called for, I believe, three concept plans. They did over 10 concept plans. We also have additional work that we need to do with respect to the environment. As you recall, there was money in the original resolution to purchase the property to do additional environmental work that was moved out of that resolution. So you had a straight purchase number within that for the $3 million. We're going to add some money back, what we think we need to do with respect to that. And then we have some complexity in design that we're dealing with as we move through that complexity in design. And finally, we have brownfield work that we have to do that wasn't contemplated in the original contract. So we have to do some additional testing and public outreach related to that brownfield. It wasn't unanticipated in terms of the purchase of the property, but it wasn't in the original contract. So we're looking at a number that's probably between $350,000 and $390,000 for that additional effort, and that should be coming to you in this month. And the reason that it's late is that we need to keep the momentum going, and we want to make sure that we stay on target in terms of when we think the completion date is. It's a critical public facility. We have other things that are tied into that. We mentioned some of the work you're doing here tonight relative to the tower situation. So that's why it's out there. And so I just wanted to update you on that, where we are right now. And we've formed an internal team. We have been meeting internally. Now that internal team is going to meet on a weekly basis to make sure that we can move this forward. And then we meet with the consultants also on a weekly basis to move this forward as well. And we're going to start the construction. We've had discussions with the town in New Paltz, and we're going to start the discussions in the town of New Paltz with respect to the local approvals that we need there. We should have the lead agency designation, which was approved. That lead agency designation and all the materials should be out by the end of this week. If not the end of this week, then by Monday, that should be out as well. So that's where we are on that. Do you have any questions? Did I leave anything out, Chris?
No, I mean, I would just like to add, I mean, this is now we've gotten over the kind of the purchase part, right? So we're moving through on a closing for that, which we expect to happen hopefully in sometime in January, February. But this is going to be multi-year. It's going to be somewhat complicated, and we're going to be working internally to find the best ways to communicate those high points and milestones to keep you all informed. We've had discussions about, and you know, I'll have to talk to leadership and others about having members of this committee sit on a project committee with us. We think it's important that a project of this magnitude has everybody of that understanding, and having representation from the legislature is certainly critical, so we can communicate these things as they happen. But I would request that as we move forward, that, and it's not a burden on us, it's something that we should be doing, that, you know, as these things start to move forward, that we have time at this meeting specifically where we can update on the project status, where, you know, we can agree on a format with the project team where we're communicating something in the same format, so these things are tracked in a way that keep you all informed as kind of the oversight of public safety.
So I'll just make a request to Michael that let's make sure that this is on the old business for these meetings going forward.
So I just want to add some additional work with respect to that. So one of the things that we're also looking at is we know we're designing this building to be carbon neutral. So the next question that we had to ask that's in the original work is the work relative to LEED certification. So we're going to design to LEED standards for sure, but the real question is LEED certification. LEED certification generally is a pretty heavy lift, particularly for government buildings, and so that usually requires additional consultation and additional consulting services. So as we have this discussion, we're waiting for the county executive to come, the county executive to come on board to have a discussion about whether we actually want to just do LEED building design and then LEED certification. And if we go through LEED certification, we're probably looking at additional monies associated with that. You should also know that we're also looking at pursuing some grants with respect to NYSERDA. There's a technical assistance grant that's due out, that's due in early February. So we're going to pursue that technical assistance grant. We started that work just the other day. That has an opportunity to essentially help us through some of the design parameters with respect to that. And then finally, at the end of that, there may be substantial money if we can be considered a carbon neutral ready building. There may be substantial money, a little less than $1 million, that may be available to us on the construction side. So we get technical assistance side. We make sure that we can harness all the NYSERDA grants that are available to us, and then we move forward to make sure that we may be eligible for additional money on that. So we're working on an application right now and having continuing discussions with the architects and engineers associated with that. And then we have to start the conversation. We had one conversation with DEC. We have to continue those conversations with DEC relative to the Brownfields program. So there's a lot of moving parts, and we want to make sure that we cover them all and keep you informed with respect to that.
Any questions from the committee?
I have
not at this moment.
Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
And one other update, or maybe two?
That's fine. Yep.
One of the other updates, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the tower program that we're doing.
Is this related to the Government Operations
Center? No, it's not.
Then let's hold it for a second because I want to talk about the Government Operations Center. This late resolution is going to be for multiple projects?
No. The late resolution will be an amendment to the capital project to increase its amount, somewhere between $350 and $390.
So that right? we can spend for...
So that we can, and then behind that, there'll be a resolution to amend the contract with the consultants.
It's one consultant, and we're amending one contract for 300 and some odd thousand dollars.
There's multiple sub-consultants under that, but the understanding is we currently have a consultant.
In the original resolution on the purchase price, it was for $3.25 million. $250,000 of that was intended for the engineering work that he's discussing. Mm-hmm. So really what we're talking about is an additional $100,000+ in addition to what we were originally requesting. At the request of the chair of the legislature, we took the $250,000 out so we could have a clean resolution just for the purchase, with the knowledge that we would be coming back because it's still an essential part of the project to keep going with all of the different engineering and environmental works.
Okay.
So the original resolutions, if you go back to your packets on that purchase, there was an additional $250,000.
Then why wouldn't it have stayed in the capital plan?
We're amending it to increase.
But why would it need to increase? Like, why would you? I understand moving it out of the resolution for the purchase, but why wouldn't you keep it in the capital?
Because it's no longer $250,000. We're increasing it.
By how much?
I think it's between
100 and 100.
So we're increasing the capital plan by 100.
120, right?
140, I think.
So
let's just. I want to get back to correct definitions. So the increase here is to amend the capital plan and then to amend the capital fund. So you're amending a capital project, right? Not just be an understanding that. So the amendment to the capital project, which is 607, number 607, is the capital project. That will be the amendment, and then there'll be a contract that'll follow that amendment to the capital project. So you have a capital project that has so much money in it for design. There's $722,000, as I recall, in it for design. That
you're now going to amend that capital project to increase that design amount somewhere in the neighborhood of $350,000 to $390,000, and then you're going to have a contract.
How can there be $350,000 that was unanticipated at already?
No, it wasn't unanticipated.
Then why is it a late resolution? I don't understand.
Because
why?
We're not able to have new business before you guys in January.
That does make sense. I mean, realize it's not just missing 1 month, it's actually missing two months.
That's correct.
Why we would... Yes. December will always be more likely and more incentive to have late resolutions.
Yeah. That was...
I am worried that this is going to come across as you guys holding this back before we went forward with the purchase, and I don't like. I know that you guys wouldn't do that, but I want you to appreciate how it might look like that.
You guys didn't approve the purchase. We had to hold everything.
I realize that
we couldn't move forward on anything else until the purchase was approved last month.
Right. We didn't have.
So
a
there was no.
No, I realize.
No,
yeah, there would be
between.
No. All right. I hear you. I do have also questions about unanticipated. It sounds like there's unanticipated brownfield cleanup, or you have anticipated it.
No, we knew that there was. We had an estimate, and we knew there was going to be anticipated work with respect to the brownfield stuff. Yeah, and that's about $57,000.
I know that I ask these questions because I plan on helping make this project come to fruition in every way that I can. But for those of us who have been supporting this, including those on this committee from the very, very beginning, you know, we're ready to go to battle to make all of these things happen. But when there are, you know, late resolutions, increases in cost, and it's so soon after the dust had barely settled, it can be challenging. It can be very, very challenging. I know it is for you guys too. So that's why I'm asking these questions.
Understood.
These are the questions that are going to be asked, and worse. Mm-hmm.
I was one of the people who defended the cost of the brownfields and saying, I believe it will cost this much. And I thought we already approved those costs. So I thought you just said there are unanticipated brownfield remediation and increase in costs on LEED certification and being environmentally friendly makes sense to me. But do you think we were misled by the consultants on the remediation?
No, not at all. And remember what Deputy County Executive Kelly has said is we had put $250,000 in the resolution to deal with some of these issues. I think the biggest surprise from the department team is the fact that the amount of work that was done in addition to what was in the contract on site selection. The effort that we put in site selection was significantly more than the effort that was in the contract. And so when the consultants came back to us and said, we need to essentially reimburse our subconsultant with respect to site selection, and they did more than twice the amount of work.
Right.
Is that because of our question?
Exactly. Because of the number of sites
that
we had
to
do.
Can we see those figures,
though?
I really want to know how much more. I mean, not to be difficult, but I also want to know what the dialogue that we had between our branches of government might have cost, you know, in pursuit of some savings, but I wonder if we'll discover that we zeroed out the savings from the lower purchase price.
Not zeroed. Certainly not.
No.
Okay.
Those deliberations...
We might need to update our press release.
in a very positive way, I will say, those deliberations forced a harder negotiation that substantially lowered the price of the property. And this is not going to change that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Legislator Hanson.
So you said essentially that the difference is going to be 140?
Between the 250 and what's being added in here, yes.
Right. So I think that we need to put in the forefront and make sure that we don't put it out there that it's in, you know, the larger amount and that it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that you did say that our chair is aware of all this.
Yes, correct.
So
we wouldn't be able to put this
right
forward without
her
consent.
So
yep.
That just so
this is at the chair's discretion to allow the late.
Okay,
so, yeah,
very good.
Thank you.
Dennis did all the
very
work.
Good.
Thank you for pointing those things out.
Yes,
that's
so kind of puts it into perspective.
I like that number.
We can give you the breakdown in terms of what was in the original contract in terms of the phases and what the additions were on that.
That'll be helpful.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. All right, any other questions on this? Oh, you wanted the other thing to talk about. Go ahead. The towers, yes.
I just wanted to say where we are with respect to towers. We have almost completed the tower in Sorries. We're doing some final punch list with respect to that. We are in design and approval for the expansion of a tower on Tanshi Mountain. It's going from 80 feet to 120 feet. We will be in front of the town in December. And there'll be a public hearing in January, and we'll be doing balloon flights and photo simulations on that tower. We've identified three other tower sites. Two of them are in the Shandaken area. One is in the Rosendale area. We've issued an RFEI, request for expression of interest, or a statement of qualifications to essentially do the feasibility on those towers in terms of the environmental work that needs to be done and their constructability. Some of the concerns that we've expressed, is particularly in the Shandaken Tower, has to do with can we actually get up the mountain to build a tower? And then we have to do property negotiations on those. We don't control any of those properties at this particular point in time. We've also engaged, quite frankly, Verizon, which is working in the Shandaken area to do cell service. So we've engaged Verizon to see whether or not their cell service facilities and our towers, or their towers and our antenna needs, can come together. We don't know whether they will or not, but that's just be aware of the fact that that's out there. The challenge is to make sure that all of these things come together at the same time that we finish an emergency the government operations center. What we don't want to have happen is trying to have two different radio systems, particularly when we're installing these radio systems in a brand new government operations center. So just be aware of the fact that we're acutely aware of trying to make sure that these things come together.
We can't have two radio systems.
Yeah. Right.
So
we won't.
We have a problem with it. We can't install the high. We don't have the room in our console system, our radio system, to take the new high band system on the fire side and install it in our current facility. You know, so having them run in parallel, the build out in parallel, is essential.
One last item?
Oh, sure. This is your last.
It's just my last. I just got to wish everybody a happy holiday. But my last is, I just wanted to go back and talk about the importance of a hazard mitigation plan. Hazard mitigation planning is something, particularly in the era of climate change, that is extremely critical to get right and to get all the participants together. Municipalities need to be participating in this plan, and you folks should basically make sure that your constituents and your municipality signs up and participates in the plan. I can tell you that we're currently involved in a resiliency study with respect to our transportation system. The results are something that we're working through right now, but the amount of transportation infrastructure that's not resilient to climate change is significant. The Department of Environment is currently involved in a resiliency study with respect to other types of things that are available at the county level, particularly critical facilities. All of this starts to come together and feeds into a hazard mitigation plan. Why is a hazard mitigation plan important? Remember, when the fact that you have disasters, 2% of disaster money that's expended gets essentially assigned to do things that are called remedial actions. So some of the things that we can do when there's a major disaster is, if you're in the plan and you have something that you want to do, you can tap that federal money coming in and make sure that federal money gets spent. It's going to be more and more critical as we try to address the issues associated with climate change, and also as you try to address a lot of the aging infrastructure that's extant in Ulster County. Thank you.
Thank you.
And happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thank you so much. All right. With that, I will take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Lively
Chair.
Discussion.
Sort of like energy meeting.
Don't ever say that again.
That's a long. No, the length of time is what I meant, sir.
Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it. Sorry to.
No. I just wanted to.
Phil Erner, how are you?
Gina Hansen.
All right, how are you?
Good.
It's going to be a great ways and means meeting, I'm sure.
We don't usually start late with the environment.
I know. Here we go. Well, this is our last one. In January, we're starting at 3 o'clock. We're coming. We're going to start at 3.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so we'll have to be done.
We'll have to be done.
Then you're going to push our meeting back.
No, I'm not. No, we can put a cap on a meeting. Did you know that?
I've heard it. Yeah. Like the same way I've heard of Bigfoot.
Well, no, we have to. I think.